everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics Podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And today I am joined by Sean Reinhart of Comics Experience, amongst other fame. And Sean, your background, which I actually don't know. We didn't talk beforehand. I know you're more on the lettering side, and you talked about going through all the Comics Experience classes or that you took. Had you had a background in this kind of production before you jumped into the lettering side of things?
No, not really. I have a master's degree in business administration, and I worked in high-tech software marketing and product management prior to this. So this has been a fun kind of tangent, free time filler I've been getting into, and it takes up more and more and more of my time. So it's in a good way, and it's something I've really enjoyed. I've always been interested in comics, and went from reading to collecting arts, and then that gets expensive. And yep. So I'm like, well, let me find a way to be in comics where somebody pays me, and and also, you know, have something that has my name on it, or something I've participated in terms of creating. So comics has been an awesome artistic outlet for me.
Yeah, that's
to undertake.
I think a number of people kind of get into it with that not sidestep, but you kind of come into it at a different point in a different way. Amy Chu, the writer, I got to know her through Comics Experience years ago, and she's still writing comics and writing on a Netflix show. And she had a background in biotech. Like, she came from this very different kind of background, but always loved telling stories, and had a friend who was doing work. And, you know, that friend is Georgia Lee, who also is a working writer. She's written on The Expanse. There's a new series that she's writing on that's coming out. Wow. And, you know, you start to see folks at different periods go, well, I love storytelling. I love comics. What's a way that I could? And then that next step. And then decade later, you're like, you're writing on a Netflix show.
I know. I've made it. I am somebody.
Yeah. Well, the idea of lettering, I think, for people starting to make comics, at least from my coming into it and anecdotally, it's not always something that you kind of think about up front. And from a, if I'm writing it, how much do I get to fit into a word balloon, to the art side of leave space for word balloons, to what part of the production process do you involve folks? And you just wrapped up the Comics Experience lettering course. Is there a way that you start folks out as far as thinking about lettering, or was there a way that you came in to your approach, or how you viewed what lettering is, can be?
Well, you know, if I were to think in context of you're doing your first comic, and, you know, where does lettering play into it? Well, some things you just kind of know about the lettering process. Letterers are going to work at print size, right? So this digital letterers. And so you want to have the end in mind about, okay, what medium is this going to be delivered, right? Basically, you know, I try to encourage creators to plan for print, even if this is just going to be a webcomic, or it's going to be, you know, wrapped into something else. If you're working at standard comic dimensions for the original art, then a letterer should be able to work with, you know, prepping those pages for print for you. So it's always easier to start at high resolution and then, you know, go down for whatever medium you have, but it's very hard to go the other way. So, you know, kind of keeping that in mind that, okay, I need to make sure that the artist I've teed up is giving me, you know, art in the proper format with the proper, dimensions, resolution, color space, so that when I hand it over to the letterer, whoever's going to do production on this, to tee up the files, so I hand them to my printer and everything's ready to go, that they can actually make that transition. And so letterers, in many cases, not only are they doing the placements of word balloons and sound effects and other design elements of a book, but in some cases they're doing title and credits pages, or they're doing logos or cover design or entire book design, right? So Letterers can be jacks of all trades to some degree. So finding a good letterer that has examples of those different capabilities or skills, right? So that you can find somebody that's going to work for the vibe that you want your book to have, or to create that appeal that you're hoping it can have to finally for a publisher or the editor you want to run your pitch by, will help you get that what find that right person. And so I try to encourage people, think with the start with the end in mind, make sure you're working at the right dimensions, make sure you're getting files that are going to support all steps of the process, because I don't know how many times I've received files where the artist is not bleeding panels appropriately, bleed them to the trim lines, like, well, that's not going to work. Things aren't set up right with respect to how the panels are organized, and it just creates a lot of headaches that could have been avoided earlier in the process.
Yeah, it's so trying to think, in terms of for listeners that might be starting out and might be at different stages of the process, I feel like, at least in my background, the technical aspect of how do you make a comic page for each of those steps, the writing to get that to the artist, to get that to the inker or colorist, or if you're a writer, inker, and then to the lettering stage. Having that workflow ahead of time is so key, because otherwise it's just going to be headaches if, like you said, you're not getting things properly formatted, there was a mistake, hey, this is the wrong DPI, any number of things, this was saved the wrong way. Just figuring out that workflow, I think, can be maybe a little daunting to folks that aren't as technically savvy, or feel like, well, how am I going to get my questions answered? How am I going to, troubleshoot this problem if I don't, have the time, have the background? Who do I call? There's so many little hiccups that you can have that can be solved with folks that do have a background in production. Not to discourage people from doing it, all themselves and trying it all yourselves, but there's a reason why there's somebody that does that aspect of the production.
And so, doing things like when you're drafting your script, you might be drafting it with the artist in mind, but also thinking about, well, how will the letterer consume this information as well, or even your colorist, right, to some degree. Make sure your panel descriptions not only indicate the action, but maybe the mood, right? So your colorist knows what vibe you're looking for. But then keep in mind that your letterer is not going to read your panel description in most cases, right? So they're only going to look at the dialogue that you've laid out, the captions. So if you want to communicate something specific to the letterer, spell that out separately from your panel description. You'll have more success for getting them to recognize it. Other small things like numbering your dialogue, right? When you get layouts back from your artist, maybe look for where the artist has sketched in those numbered word balloons, right? So they've left space for it. Because when, otherwise the letter is going to be covering up your art, which you just paid for and had colored, right? And paid to have colored. So, keeping those things in mind can help, set expectations appropriately down the road. Other things like, there are proper, punctuation conventions in comics. Don't be throwing semicolons in your text, right? You don't see that very often. And if you're looking for tips on, how to optimize my script, I might have mentioned them on the show before, but Nate Picos's Blambot.com website. One, Nate has a ton of typefaces he provides to for small press and indie comics use at no charge. He's like a philanthropist to some degree to promote the comics medium. And but he also has these great tips section of his website that's just this small, concise tips on how to optimize your script or your lettering for common comics conventions, and make you familiar with them. So from everything to cross bar I's to when to use quotation marks to when to use dashes, So, you know, understanding those conventions can, you know, line things up better for your letter. Otherwise, your letter is fixing them all. And you know, so it takes time out of page rate, right? That the letter's putting in in terms of effort. You know, other things to kind of like you might not think about, but when you put an effect or a sound effect sound in your panel description, is you know, you'll have 25 letters in this sound, you know, for somebody getting, you know, hit in the eye by, you know, a fist or something. The letter is going to crop that down, right? They're not going to go with some crazy, you know, inordinate number of characters. So you don't have to go overboard with that, but also indicate what is making the sound. So I don't know how many times where I've had a script and I look at the panel and there might be multiple actions happening. Like, well, what's getting this sound that's described here? And then you have to read, it just slows you down in the process. So, you know, just indicating SFX source and then the actual sound that you want. Little things like that make the process go easier. You know, there are a bunch of other things like you might have not think about at the time, but like differentiating your caption notes in your script. So you have time captions, you have dialogue captions, but also indicate the voice that's being used in the caption, right? So is it a narrative? Is it a character caption, right? Because if it just says caption X, I don't know, should that be in quotations? Should it be a caption box connected to a character, right? Is this an overall narrative caption? So, you know, those things can make the process of lettering go much more simply down the road for everybody involved.
I think that's a good point in the time is money kind of thinking about it from how you're involving people in each step, you know, depending on where the budget's coming from, is if it's coming from a publisher, if it's coming from crowdsourcing, hey, I'm just going to put a comic together and fund it myself, you know, whatever step you're taking, and that goes across the board if you're paying somebody to write for you, to draw, to color, et cetera. Edit, but there are learning curves to get to the point of being able to get it streamlined to where, hey, I'm going to set you up for the best success that you can have for your time and the budget. You know, go. How do you get? Yeah, I think that's kind of always trying to refine any, at least for me, creative process. Obviously, there's the creative component, but there's also the real world. Hey, people have lives, they have stuff to do, they want to, you know, make their rate and do the thing and get out. To that point, you know, when there is something like my cool horror book has the vampire coming up and the big reveal that he's about to bite someone, and you know, I want a cool sound effect that's bleh, but horror and vampire-y, things like that. You know, I don't know, in terms of sound effects and styling, is there a good approach or a way to think about that, or is that something you've not really encountered enough to be like, oh, it's not really a problem, we just I'll look for a font, I'll have to create something, maybe the artist will draw that.
Yeah, like all of the above. So I'll see some artists will decide they'll take a crack at that sound effect and put it in. The time where that becomes somewhat problematic for the letterer is that you might have one or two panels that have a sound effect in them, but it's really hard for the letterer to replicate that sound effect in other panels, right? You know, kind of thinking with that in mind, if you're going to do the sound effects, maybe try to do most of the large ones, right, in that series, if you're the artist, and not just do this one that you want to do, and then nothing else matches that, you know, from the lettering standpoint, through the rest of the book. But things like, you know, what typeface to use, those types of things, you might give some reference to your letter and say, hey, I like the look and feel of these properties out here, or these examples, you know, something in this vein. But your letterer knows the best way to, you know, find typefaces, effects that go with the design aesthetics of the art, right? So they know if it's more realistic to go one route, they are more cartoony to go another route, and everywhere in between. So you can pretty much trust their judgment in finding something that will work. And or you pay them maybe to do a couple of sample pages with different workups, right, if you're really concerned about it. So that might be a way to kind of narrow in on exactly what you're looking for. But your letterers, they work in tons of different genres every week, right? And so they know what's working best in to get that effect you're looking for without it clashing mm-hmm. with the art. Because, you know, a lot of great lettering is lettering that is barely noticed, right? Because if you're noticing the lettering, oftentimes it might not be that great, and it could be taking you out of the story, and that's not what a letterer wants to happen. So, you know, getting that flow through the page, getting people from one panel to the other, making sure, you know, voices and styles match the art, that's where the designer capabilities of a letterer really, really pay off in the end product.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking while you were talking about lettering and art pairs, art and lettering pairs, and the one that always comes to my mind is Walt Simonson and John Workman in the 80s on mm-hmm. Thor and Fantastic Four. And as an adult reader, going back and rereading those, you know, just seeing that work in conjunction, and you summed it up the way that it should be summed up. Lettering is kind of invisible when you notice it. That might not be what you need to do. But in the moment of reading a comic and having, you know, a bit of dialogue affect you, make you happy, sad, sentimental, nostalgic, whatever the emotion that can be evoked, or the same thing with a sound effect, that it can have such a resonance, and you're not analyzing it and thinking, I wonder what Sean used here. What font is that? Like yeah. that doesn't really occur
That's
to you.
That's a question I ask. Yeah.
But if you're trying to dissect it for more of an academic, like, why did I feel this? You know, how did they build the sequence of panels, or what was the, you know, the impetus of the story? Why do I care? Why do I feel? And, you know, it's funny to try to dissect stuff or deconstruct stuff as trying to make comics versus mm-hmm. the reader, where you might be zipping through and none of it occurs to you, to any of the things that happen in the background as far as lettering goes, or how the eye is drawn, or what the sound effects mean, and what has that resonance for later.
Right. And there are so many, I kind of feel like with this big prevalence of, you know, indie comics, such a huge variety outside of the big three in terms of stories you're seeing. We have many more, a lot of designer aesthetics encroaching into comics today. And it's really amazing the great variety of lettering that I see out there that really accentuates the art, works well with it from a storytelling standpoint, and isn't just cookie cutter. Here's your symmetrical balloon, right? You know, pointing and with your standard typeface. I mean, it's aesthetically pleasing and integrated with the art. And there are some letterers out there like Aditya Bidikar, Hasa Atsmain, Elhau, and Nate Picos, Russ Wooten, you know, and dozens of others who are really taking the lettering medium even further as an art form. And, you know, I kind of aspire to be among that group in my own work. But I'm just really impressed when I pick up some of these stories and just how the craftsmanship involved with the lettering, which definitely goes underappreciated in many cases, but it really takes these books to new levels.
Yeah, it, like you said, it is kind of that invisible thing unless you look for it and don't realize why it feels complete. And my former business partner was a motion designer and design director. And the conversations that we'd have around design would a lot of times be about how hard it is to get to that simple look. And, you know, working with clients who think like the big flashy thing, oh, that must be expensive and take a lot of time. And sometimes it does, but a lot of times it doesn't. And the thing that looks simple and easy just takes so much longer to execute and to build to that level of, well, I've been doing it for 20 years, so right. I can execute this, you know, this way. It took me 20 years to get to this point versus, you know, what you might start at the beginning and have to work your way to.
Yeah, from when I'm working with the students I had in the recent class, It was really emphasizing comics conventions, looking at the air in the balloon that surrounds the text, how the tails are working, how they intersect with the balloon, placements on the page, emphasizing reading order. So not so much so from a this is what you will do in every project, but just to train their eyes to look for and be sensitive to these elements on the page. And then they can deviate from that where the storytelling requires it, or add their own design, capabilities or sensibilities, to those stories. So, but yeah, everybody should be, sending their letterers Christmas cards, right? Finishing all the hard work they do, and providing that polish to the to their stories at the end of the day. So.
Sorry about getting it to you last minute. I know colors and letters always seem to have that have to be left holding the bag sometimes if there's production delays along the way.
Yeah, if you can avoid that, that's great. Float the letterer X, a little urgent fee surcharge on the lettering rate, especially if you're asking them to turn it around on a weekend, push out the rest of their schedule. And in a lot of cases, it's just not fair. It's that the letterer to have to pick up the slack. And if there's any way you can avoid that, give them the script ahead of time, then they can prep pages, right? And then the actual lettering part can go much more quickly. Just set expectations ahead of time to avoid the last minute, hey, it's due tomorrow. What can you do to make this happen? My
Do
artist was on PlayStation for too long, right? To miss the deadline.
and sometimes deadlines do change for lots of different reasons, but yeah, if they can be avoided, that's a good thing to do. Well,
Right.
right now, Dead End Kids Volume 2 is out. That's Sourcepoint Press. Is that the trade
That's
you mentioned?
right. Yeah. Frank Gogol is the man there, and I've been working with Frank for a while. The second volume of Dead End Kids should be on the shelves now. I think issue 3 or 4 recently dropped. And yeah, check it out. It's been a little indie hit, and Frank has had a ton of success. He's awesome to work with, and I've really enjoyed that series. It's very, very character. Very character-driven storytelling, and it's a fun read. So,
Excellent. And you mentioned that you can't talk about some of the upcoming stuff, but there's stuff in the pipeline that will be coming out this year and
yeah, I know Frank has been teasing some other stuff that I have in my inbox and on the art board now, which is exciting to anticipate. And then some of our colleagues at CE also got a couple things in the hopper with them. And if you're, I mentioned this earlier before we started recording, but there's a story called The V Card by Dallas Cassavant that's published by Antarctic Comics. If you like G.I. Joe, vampire stories, Seinfeld, comedy, romance, that old yarn type thing, and definitely check out that series. It's an underrated hit, if you ask me. So that was a lot of fun to work on that series. And then I worked with other folks like Rich Duick and James Janowski and Pete Rogers, Steven Arian, Brendan Hykes, a lot of other creators I've had a pleasure to work with, get books out for them.
Nice. And the Comics Experience lettering course just wrapped up. If you do want to know more about the upcoming courses, you can always subscribe to the Comics Experience newsletter, and that'll tell you what's coming up so you can catch lettering next go round or see what is currently available over there at comicsexperience.com. You can also email info@comicsexperience.com if you have questions, or you can tweet at them at Comic Experience. Is there a good place to find you online, Sean?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Sean Reinhart. That's SEANRINEHART, or my website with the same name as the URL there.
Excellent.
So, yeah, and I'm on the Creators Workshop too. You can see me out there if you happen to be a member, and happy to interact in any of those media. So.
And you can get to the Creators Workshop through the Comics Experience site, which I found out that's how Sean got involved, was the going through the Comics Experience Creators Workshop, and that, and here you are now, with all that to blame.
Yeah, exactly.
The workshop is always open, and if you do have those "how do I do this" questions that happen at 1 a.m. on a Friday, that's a place you can go.
Great place to get answers.
It is, and you will get an answer, and sometimes you'll be surprised by who answers it, and that is awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much again, Sean, for your time. And if you do have a question, email info@comicsexperience.com. We will happily talk about it on the show. Until then, keep making comics with great lettering.